So, a couple of weeks ago, Pastor TC and I looked at each other and realized that all of our kids were gone. They were out in the world doing things, eating with other people, and we did not have to figure out what to feed them. And so in those instances, we look at each other and we always say, do you want to go to Red Cow? That is our favorite place. It's our date night spot. And it was actually like a little bit of a stressful decision-making process because we both knew we wanted a burger and we both knew that we wanted Red Cow. But since they've changed their menu, they took my favorite thing off the menu, which was their maple bacon Brussels sprout situation. I know, right? Right? They replaced it with cauliflower. No. What? No, thank you. So it was a little bit of a stressful process because TC was looking for a place that had Brussels sprouts and a burger. And I was like not in love with the offerings that they have. And we kept thinking about this one burger that we wanted to have that night. And the only place that we could get it was Red Cow. So this burger is the mushroom and Swiss burger. I know. In fact, as we were looking at the menu, we were thinking about the grilled onion or grilled mushrooms that were going to be on the burger and the caramelized onions that was going to be on the burger. And we were looking at the specific kind of Swiss cheese, not Target because it's Red Cow and they're smarter and better than that. We were thinking about the Swiss cheese and how perfectly melted it was all going to be together. And then what really, really set it off was the truffle garlic little aioli that they put on it. Pastor TC he's getting into the seventh heaven over here. He's feeling spirit. And then the brioche, like the bun, the baked bun that they have fresh made every single day. We were thinking about that bun and how perfect it was going to be. And of course, the meat patty. And we were thinking about all of these elements and how much, Red Cow was the only place we can get that burger with those elements. And I decided that I'd rather have that without Brussels sprouts than a place that didn't have that burger with Brussels sprouts. There's something particular about that burger that satisfies TC's burger, our collective burger desire. In fact, as we were eating it, he said, every single time I have this burger, you said transported? Is that the word you used? You were like, I'm just transported. He was moaning. He was slowly chewing. Because we don't like to take leftovers, we are not leftover people, so we split it. And every time he's like, should we have gotten our own?
I'll tell you what I said. Here's what I said. What I said was this. I said, there's a moment when I'm eating this burger every time when I think all is right in the world.
Yes! That's exactly what he said. It is the perfect combination of savory and sweet. There's distinct care and consistency that we've enjoyed from the chef. All is right in the world. It's the perfect size for sharing. And like I said, yet every single time we go to share, we look at each other and say, could we have had our own burger? It satisfies. Now, we could have gone to another burger spot. There are dozens in our city. We're not big Juicy Lucy fans, but I mean, I'm sure we could have gotten one of those. And you know, there's McDonald's, and we have points in our app from our many trips to McDonald's. But here's the thing. That burger and that restaurant has proven itself to us that when we are craving a burger, it's Red Cow's mushroom and Swiss that we crave. Our passage today is about satisfaction and cultivating a craving for God because of our desire for God. And it's a craving, cultivating that craving for God so that we can begin to crave and desire love and care for others. Satisfaction from God to us, and then we want others to experience satisfaction from God. In fact, that is what our passage invites us into, this idea of righteousness. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. In our series this summer, The Center of Gravity, we've begun studying the Sermon on the Mount through Jesus's teachings on the kingdom of God as described by the different kinds of people who will find hope in the kingdom. Those who have been ignored, overwhelmed, or exploited will be cared for, comforted, honored, and ultimately made whole. This stops, just so you know. Okay. You'll have to edit that because I flipped it around. So let's begin with unpacking the key word of this beatitude, righteousness. So in an article called Words We've Fudged, Righteousness, the Greek word in our beatitude today for righteousness is dikaiosune, means living in right relationship with God, others, and all creation. It stems from the Greek word dikaios, meaning equity of character and action, where the stress on equity, impartiality, and fairness, and action implies the concept of justice. So it's this idea of living in justice and right relationship with God and with others. In fact, it's what we see as a framework for Jesus's teachings when he says that the greatest commandments are these two things. The greatest commandment is a framework of righteousness. Mark 12, 30 through 31 says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and all your strength. And the second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. There's no commandment greater than these. So righteousness, as described in our beatitude today, is more than Christian character that is defined by right living for God. And it's more than Christian mercy and compassion as defined as care for those who are suffering. Righteousness is both and. When Jesus says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled, he is describing the kind of Christian life that is characterized by the shalom of God. The wholeness and flourish and fullness and flourishing, the restoration, the peace of God that is accomplished through personal piety and overflowing from ourselves, we offer care and compassion and love for others. This ongoing connection with God allows us to have an ongoing connection with our neighbors. Again, it is both and. I will tell you that the very first time I learned this passage, I learned it in an evangelical setting that focused on that personal piety piece, that part of you must live righteous before God. And if you do all the right things, then you'll be satisfied. You won't have any problems. You won't experience loneliness, or you will be okay if you just follow God's rules. But the reality is that we live in a world that is broken. The reality is that we deal with mental health issues and job instability. We deal with so many things. And following a set of rules doesn't change the reality of the world that we live in. So what actually changes our perspective and our capacity to live in this world? It is this ongoing relationship with God. Cynthia Bourgeau is a contemporary mystic and theologian, and she cautions us from having this righteousness is only the rules that we follow because this is what God says. She says that the key to understanding the fourth beatitude lies in understanding the word righteousness. In our, this is Bourgeau speaking, to our post-Puritan, post-Victorian ears, righteousness is a synonym for virtue. It means being moral, behaving correctly. But in Israel of Jesus's time, righteousness was something much more dynamic. She suggests that the audience who heard Jesus's promise of satisfaction for those who hunger and thirst for righteousness would think of yearning for nothing less than an alignment of their hearts with God's, that tending to their soul so that they can hear God more clearly. That dynamic, ongoing relationship with God is what they would more readily think of when Jesus says, those that hunger and thirst for righteousness will be filled. Those that hunger and thirst for close connection with God will experience a connection with God. that to them that they should begin thinking of adjusting their lives and their priorities into God's divine order, so that they not just have ethical correctness, like just like do good things, but they live correctly with each other because of their infilling of God's presence with them. The very essence of God's will manifesting in and through their lives is what their imaginations would begin to spark when they heard Jesus' teaching. And I think that's a very interesting way of changing how we engage with this passage. Because what she suggests is that blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. It's not just a moral imperative, but an invitation towards a spiritual path of knowing and loving God. It's an invitation to listen for our hunger and thirst cues. Now let's consider this concept of hunger and thirst, because I really get this. These are powerful and primal experiences. It's what I was feeling when TC was looking at so many restaurants with Brussels sprouts, and I was like, I just need to eat. Like, let's just pick a place. It drives us to seek sustenance. It drives us to seek fulfillment. In our daily lives, hunger and thirst compel us to act. We want to satisfy those needs. In fact, one of the reasons we fast food, for those of us who can fast food, is because we want to become more attuned with our body's cues. We want to know what it means for our bodies to let us know that it is hungry or that it is thirsty. Like, for instance, for me, it always begins with anger. Just irrational anger. Like, at everything. The dishwasher, the dog, the way the blanket, like, wraps itself around my legs when I'm trying to get up. When anger comes, I know I need to eat quickly. TC used to give me Snicker bars, for real, when I would get angry. He saw that commercial and he was like, yes, Lord, I hear you speaking to me. Thirst is different though, right? Hunger comes, we know it, we feel it. But thirst is different. It just kind of like just creeps up on us, right? Like, we can go all day long without truly satisfying our thirst. Like, for me, I can go all day long and then look up at 6 o'clock with a pounding headache and kind of just in a fog and realize I haven't really drank anything other than coffee all day. Hunger and thirst are cues that invite us to nourish our bodies. So Jesus is saying in this beatitude, pay attention to the cues of your soul that hunger and thirst for me. And when you pay attention to them and you meet those, you will be satisfied. But that's the first piece. Like I said, it is both and. Our spiritual lives require us to pay attention and want us to, our souls want us to tend to them. And so that is what cultivating a spiritual life is. It's that tending to your soul. Because what happens when I tend to my soul? When I begin to think about my hunger, my soul's hunger and thirst cues for God, I begin to pay more attention to what I do throughout my day. So like, I eat more than a banana and drink more than coffee. And then I begin to learn, oh, actually I need more protein in the morning. And I need a super huge obnoxious Stanley cup to like carry around throughout the day. These are the things that I do that feel the need in my body. So to tend to our soul hunger and thirst cues, we should look at different things. Like learning a different prayer practice or meditation, reading books or trying out different Bible studies, or committing to grow alongside others in our faith journey. When we do this work of cultivating this interior peace with God and ourselves, then we can live into that second part of the scripture, the both and part of the word righteousness, becoming bringers of peace for others. From this space of interior peace, we can begin to create peace right where we are. And I think that's what our world needs, right? We look around and we think, where are the bringers of peace? Where are the sane people? Like Mr. Rogers says, where are the helpers? There are wars and rising costs of living and loss of life and property. to natural disasters, there's assassination attempts, there's removal of trusted officials, and now there are all these new calls to action to defend our democracy in this election season. So the invitations to fix what's going on out here are plenty. The other day, TC and I were on a walk, and we were pondering the reality of homelessness and social injustice that casually intrudes our everyday lives. Like, we see our unhoused neighbors self-medicating and trying their best to survive, and we're moved. We want to act. We want justice. We hunger and thirst for them. But we also feel increasingly hopeless and overwhelmed. There has to be a non-anxious, grounding state from which we perceive these reminders that our world is not whole, full, flourishing, and at peace. We need this so that we can discern what is ours to do, and we can do it from a place of hope and not a place of ego and anxiety. See, I've noticed that every single time I try to show up for the work of justice, the work of righteousness, to project some reputation or please my ego, I end up making some major mistake that accidentally dehumanizes the person or people I want to help. I end up setting unrealistic expectations and unattainable goals for myself and my work, or I end up burning out. And all these things lead to a kind of resentment, frustration, and despair. I begin to believe that maybe righteousness just means that really quiet, pious, just me and God place, because when I try to do something for God, for others, because of God, it never works out. It just feels like it's way too hard. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst for righteousness, though, is a grounding mantra that we need. It grounds us in the goodness and love of God that keeps us humble to trust in God's guidance and empowering along our way to being a part of collective freedom. It keeps us held in God's hands. I think about how Jesus ministered to so many people, and he was constantly surrounded by injustice, and yet he stayed grounded. He endured. He was not overtaken by the need. He was not obsessed with projecting a certain ego. He didn't really care so much about his reputation. He hungered and thirsted for righteousness. He was deeply connected with God, the loving Father, and that fueled his love and care for his human siblings. See, he had a different perspective on the work of seeking justice. And we see this as Jesus was going, person by person, circumstance by circumstance. His posture towards justice was one of grounded, non-anxious, non-anxiety. And I truly believe because he trusted the guidance of the Father in his work of justice. The spirit that was with him was one that kept him calm and that kept him focused. He didn't get caught up in some of the larger, harder overhaul issues of oppression, like Rome's occupation or the rampant exploitation of the poor. He dealt with these issues as they came up. As he saw Rome's occupation harming those in front of him, he dealt with it. As he saw exploitation of the poor, he dealt with it. And these small acts, one by one, created a revolution. It inspired others. It reminded those that were following Jesus that they are a part of a collective seeking shalom. So we do this by hungering and thirsting for God, by tending to our soul's hunger cues, paying attention to them, meeting them, being filled and satisfied. And from that place of satisfaction, we can enter in and care for the needs of others. Now, this attunement, particularly around justice, is called contemplative activism. Contemplative activism is the approach to social change that integrates that inner, interior work of contemplation, a deep connection with God, with the outward acts of justice and compassion. It's the work of becoming mindful. And I love this. I heard this from a spiritual director. She said that contemplative activism is the work of becoming mindful of our unconscious motivations around our justice work and holding those in God's presence and allowing God to refine those motivations so they are pure and holy, righteous. We do this interior work of aligning our motivations with God, and then we move through the world as presence of peace. It represents the both and nature of our passage today, personal piety and collective care. So when we hunger and thirst for righteousness, we cultivate a deep longing within ourselves, a longing that propels us to compassion, justice, and integrity. And that inner fire that refuses to be quenched by the superficial or the mundane, but seeks instead to be a transformative power of our divine love, inspires us and keeps us going. But we also have to remember Bourgeau's caution against self-righteousness. True righteousness, she suggests, is not about superiority or moral grandstanding, but about humility, the recognition of our interconnectedness with all creation. It's about seeking the good of others as we fervently seek our own. So as we reflect on these profound teachings, we have a little practical exercise at the tables. Would you grab me the elements for a s'more?
Yeah.
Will you just stand here and be my Vanna?
Yes.
Okay. So we are going to
the body and the marshmallow.
So we're going to make s'mores together as a application of our practice of this both and approach to the Beatitudes. So the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to grab a graham cracker, one graham cracker. And the first one is going to be the personal piety. So this is the graham cracker that's going to touch the marshmallow, which is one way you're going to practice loving God this week. So personal piety, and then you'll think of one way that you're going to practice loving God this week. Deepening your connection to God, paying attention to your hunger and your soul's hunger and thirst cues. Then you're going to take another graham cracker, and this is collective care. This is the side of righteousness where we love our neighbor well. So then we take the chocolate, and the chocolate will be one thing you're going to do this week to practice loving your neighbor. So that can be anything that you will do this week to practice loving your neighbor. Like, for instance, I'm going to go to a Zoom call this week about the election because I want to learn more and know how I can show up. That's one way of practicing loving your neighbor. And so we're going to make our s'mores.
And then you smush them together.
And then you smush them together because it's what? Both and. So we're going to invite you to come over to the table. There's paper plates, and you can put your piece together. The first one is personal piety. The next, the marshmallow, is one thing you're going to do to love God this week. And then the other graham cracker is collective care. And then the chocolate is one thing you're going to do to love your neighbor this week. I'm just going to invite you to do this in silence as much as you can. So we're all adults. We haven't brought the kids yet. So let's try to do this in silence. Just be contemplative about what it is that you want to do to connect to God this week and what it is that you want to do to care for your neighbor this week. And we'll turn on some music while we make our plates. And if you bring your plates back, once everybody has their plates back here, we'll call the kids over. They can make their plates, and then we can go heat them up together. Sound good?